Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Well, here we are again. It's Monday. My goodness. I watched the McCain and Obama interview with that character, previously unknown pastor of Saddleback Church, Rick Warren. You know, many of you don't understand that this is a part of the government media religion complex. Rick Warren is not the conservative evangelical that the empty skirts in the media would have you believe he is. Who is this man? What shocked me the most is that they did not discuss the biggest issue facing America, which is immigration, illegal immigration. The word border was not mentioned once at the event. The word language, English, was not mentioned once. The word culture was not mentioned once. Rick Warren is part and parcel of the two-party system. He seems to be, to me, an invention of the two-party system, a sort of event to make it look as though he's going before the evangelical crowd, when in fact Rick Warren is as close to an evangelical as, let's put it to you this way, it's a hybridized liberal Christianity that it represents, in my opinion.
Climate change, out of control spending, torture, the list goes on a large number of issues that I've put my country first and I've reached across the aisle.
Who is the pastor of the Saddleback Church where these candidates appeared? Rick Warren has called for the reconciliation between liberal mainstream churches and conservative evangelical churches, i.e. gay marriage. Rick Warren was credited by Time magazine for his focus on fighting HIV/AIDS and global warming, which, as you well know, is a fantasy. In other words, he's a favorite of the far left. Warren avoids talking about sin, such as abortion and gay marriage, in his preaching. Now you understand why both of these shill candidates appeared there? Warren allowed CNN, the most far left of the cable news networks, to broadcast the McCain-Obama event. Again, I will repeat, not one question that I know of was raised about the seminal issue of our time. The future of America hangs in the balance like a loose tooth. They did not discuss illegal immigration. They did not discuss children being born here whose parents are illegal aliens, i.e. anchor babies. They did not discuss English language, the English language once. They did not discuss the cultural bedrock upon which this nation was built.
I think that part of our plan, though, has to be how do we prevent more orphans in the first place. And that means that we're helping to build a public health infrastructure around the world, that we are building on the great work that you and, by the way, this president has done when it comes to AIDS funding around the world.
In my opinion, this show debate was very Stalinist. It was nothing more than an opportunity to cover for Obama's far-left views. It gave Obama an opportunity to play the part of Daniel in the lion's den. And as for McCain, the question remains, why does he agree to speak to a liberal church on CNN and yet refuses to come on conservative talk radio? I thought it was outrageous that McCain said, I will appear before any venue. I want to meet any audience I can in America. And yet he's given the middle finger to the Savage Nation, to every other talk show in America that is truly conservative, to all of the conservative websites. He will not appear before it. The man is a liar. McCain is a liar. Now, it's a choice between which liar do you want, McCain the liar or Obama the liar? And who was the bigger liar and who was the bigger threat to America? And if that's what this country has come down to, the choice between one big fat liar or another, we're in worse shape than you can imagine. But again, let's go back to the main thing here. Everyone's buzzing about going before an evangelical church, a supposedly evangelical church, and answering questions. But where were the questions about the most important questions? They weren't there. Who was this man, Rick Warren? Where did he come from? Who suddenly anointed him as the spokesman for evangelicals and conservatives? Why, CNN did. Wow, that's truly a trustworthy source, as you well know. This was nothing more than a show debate. It was right out of the Soviet Union. It would make Joseph Stalin proud. It was nothing. And for McCain, he leaves me wanting a real conservative candidate. Again, I want to reiterate before we go, this guy Warren has called for the reconciliation between liberal mainstream churches and conservative evangelical churches, meaning he wants to confuse evangelicals into becoming liberals. Time magazine, one of the left-wing, one of the most left-wing of all the magazines, has credited Rick Warren for fighting HIV/AIDS and combating global warming. Oh, how touching that is. Let us talk about behavior in fighting HIV/AIDS, and let us talk about the thousands upon legitimate scientists who reject the idea of man-caused global warming rather than from some huckster preacher. Warren avoids sin issues such as abortion and gay marriage. What does that tell you about him? Again, take this as a take-home message. Neither candidate was asked, nor did either candidate speak, about the seminal issue of our time, illegal immigration, the preservation of our sovereignty and our borders. This is Michael Savage. What's next? From Saddleback Church to a gay synagogue? Is that McCain's idea for the next appearance? A gay synagogue? Be here or be nowhere. It's the Savage Nation.
Savage. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Why is it that this last generation has become a generation of sluts and empty men who are incapable of raising a family, who are much like girlfriends with a male appendage attached to their body? Have the girls descended so far down the scale of social evolution that they think God put them on the planet simply to have an orgasm and to get drunk and puke on themselves in a nightclub at 3 o'clock in the morning? Who is responsible for this this disgusting imagery that we are paraded, that is paraded before us on a daily basis? These celebrity sluts like Paris Hilton, who we all detest. Anyone who does not detest her is a psychotic. How could you not detest these people? It's impossible not to detest what they stand for. They stand for the vapidity of our times. They stand for the death of the West. They stand for the decadence that most sane people do not want to engage in. If you check out the connections between this and the media, you'll find out that there's a reason that Western women do not want to have children and that Western boys have become much like girls with a male appendage, sort of like a pocketbook with short hair for the girls to drag around and show off for a while until they dismiss them and get another human satisfier toy called a man. The men will not have children. They don't even understand that it is the mark of a man to get married and have children. The women don't want to have children because it might spoil their bods. And after all, isn't it all about their bods and their abs and their butt and their lats? Isn't that what the girls want, are good butts and good abs and good lats? Now, why is it that girls are behaving sort of like homosexuals in their mentality? And why is it that our boys are leading a sort of homosexualized lifestyle in their own way? How is it the entire West, in essence, is engaging in a dance of death, which in many ways mimics the gay lifestyle? How did that happen? I'll let you put two and two together. But I have to take my hat off to the Pope. The Pope is the intellectual, the religious intellectual leader of the West. There are no Jewish leaders I am sorry to tell you, speaking out as clearly and as succinctly as the Pope does on so many issues. The Pope said last week that homosexuals are destroying themselves. And I want to read you what the Pope said. And if you have a problem with what I'm reading to you, why don't you send it to the Vatican, not to me? Pope Benedict XVI said homosexuals end up destroying themselves, so the church has a duty to speak out on moral issues that affect the very spiritual and physical lives of man. Now, most Americans know this, which is why anytime they're allowed to vote against homosexual marriage, which they know to be an abomination and a death service, not a life-giving service, they say no to the death service called homosexual marriage. Now, he didn't write that, I did. But I'll read you what the Pope said. I'm quoting now. Quote, in seeking to emancipate himself from his body, man ends up by destroying himself, close quote. The Pope told cardinals, archbishops, bishops, and members of the Roman Curia last week in a meeting overlooked by most of the world's press. The Pope also lamented low birth rates in Europe, saying couples no longer seem to want children. This fact, said the Pope, has penetrated my soul. He continued. He said men and women today are unsure about the future. This fact, alongside the desire to have all of life to themselves, is perhaps the most profound reason for which the risk of having children appears to many as almost unbearable. If we do not relearn the basic foundations of life, if we do not rediscover the certainty of faith, it will also be ever more difficult for us to give others the gift of life and the challenges of an unknown future. The Pope also referred to the controversy over homosexual marriage. He said, quote, at this point, I cannot fail to mention my concern over de facto couples. When new legislation is created that relativizes marriage, the rejection of the definitive bond gains judicial endorsement. Relativizing the difference between the sexes tacitly confirms those bleak theories which seek to remove all relevance from a human being's masculinity or femininity as if this were a purely biological matter. God bless Pope Benedict XVI for speaking out on the seminal issue of our time, which is the homosexual dance of death and the homosexualization of the West. There is a direct correlation between the homosexualization of the media, the homosexual mafia that controls virtually everything that you read, everything that you see, everything that you hear, everything that you wear, and the behavior of our boys and girls, and the fact that they will not have children, and they simply want to party until 3 a.m. and spend the money on designer items so they look good, and they have good abs and good butts and good lats and good delts. After all, isn't a good ab better than a good son? Isn't a good butt better than a good daughter? I'll let you figure out how we have descended to the level below that of the apes. Lower than the chimpanzee, my friend, all a result of the demons who rule the media and have ruled the media to the point of extinction. Knoxville, Tennessee. Steve, you're on the Savage Nation.
I listen to your show all the time, and I hear you talk a lot about the media and how it's become so biased and that they only play the stories that benefit them. Yet when I listen to your show, I hear most of your callers are just singing your praises, and they don't really give you anything to debate about.
Well, why don't you give me something to debate about?
I'm sorry?
Why don't you give me something to debate about?
Well, I mean, I'm very liberal, so most of your views...
Oh, so give me something we can debate. Go ahead. You called. You want to debate. Let's debate.
Okay. First thing that I've been listening to that you've been saying is how you feel that the third world cultures shouldn't be brought into America, that we've brought ourselves to higher standards than that. And
so you think third world standards should be introduced to America and we should, what, give up internal plumbing?
No, is that you do, however, seem to think that we should start torturing.
Now you're changing. You want to talk about interrogating people who would cut your throat, or you want to talk about eliminating the flush toilet? Which one do you want to talk about?
No. What I'm saying is those are the cultures and those are the standards that they hold themselves to. So why would we hold ourselves to the standards of...
Well, you see what you're doing? This is classic liberalism, where you use twisted logic and come up with a faulty conclusion. You are in a war, just as I am in a war, with Islamic fascists who would like to kill you and or convert you. Do you accept that or not?
I accept that there are extremists in the Muslim community that would like to,
yeah. All right, they would like that. And they have no rules with regard to how they treat us. Is that correct?
That is,
and they're also much tougher. They're much tougher and battle-hardened and more fanatic than anyone you could ever imagine. They feel virtual no pain. They're like supermen. Now, how would you get information from them? What techniques would you use?
Well, I'm not saying that I've got the answers to that, but I think that...
Well, you do. You have the answer, which is don't use any astringent techniques. You have an answer. You don't have an... This is such a typical Democrat call. You have no answer, but you know that what the Republicans want to do or the conservatives want to do is wrong. That's classically Pelosi logic.
And this is why you don't take Democratic calls. And
I just took one. I just took a Democrat call, and you didn't come up with a conclusion, a solution, a proposal, nothing. All you said was... Your idea of torturing the bad guys is wrong. So I asked you, how would you extract information? You said, I don't know.
Okay. The other point.
Now, let's deal with the next problem. Let's deal with immigration. You like illegal immigrants in America?
Not illegal, no, but I don't think we should close the borders by any means.
And so how would you stop the tide, the millions and millions and millions of illegal aliens coming in from Mexico? How would you stop it?
Well, how do you figure that closing the borders is going to help our country?
Well, wait, you're changing the discussion. We both agreed that we are wanting to stop the flood of illegal aliens into America. Didn't we agree on that?
Yes, illegal, but I don't want to close the borders down. Yes, that's where you go to that extreme. You say don't let anyone...
How would you stop the illegals from coming into America? How would you do it?
How would you...
Well, no, you're not answering me. You just said you want to stop the illegal aliens. I'm asking you how you would do it. How would you do it?
Okay, obviously every system is flawed, and there are other ways than just closing down the...
What are the... Give me one other way to stop the flood of illegals who have no fear of our laws because the laws are so weak and so watered down. They also know that they'd rather put that in the American judicial system and the American Justice Department and the Democrats and the Republicans would rather put our Border Patrol agents behind bars than illegal aliens or drug dealers. So how would you stop them?
Okay, the problem with this whole conversation is... You're going to such an extreme by closing the entire border and not thinking of any other solutions yourself.
What do you mean by closing the entire border? I didn't say close the entire border. I said make the border impassable by illegal aliens. I didn't say build a concrete wall that no one could go across.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Savage. Listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
I need to cook a piece of fish tonight or tomorrow night, and I haven't been able to do it properly, so I've asked for a professional chef to call the show. We have someone in Portland, Tammy, on KXL. Go ahead, please. How do I pan fry fish?
You want to pan fry it, so what you want to do is marinate it just a little bit with your olive oil, and then when you go to put it in the pan after it's marinated, you want to put just a sprinkling of your favorite seasoning salt and about 2 tablespoons of your favorite olive oil in the pan, about medium-high heat. And I like my fish done.
Absolutely. I won't accept pink fish anywhere. I don't know where this trend came from, this stupidity, this sushi grade fish that you get pink. People are getting parasites from it. I'm a trained epidemiologist. You don't eat raw fish. This is total insanity.
Just wrong.
You know, this all started with the chefs, with the pink fish. I send it back over and over again. No pink, and they send it to me pink in the middle. I like my fish cooked. Thank you for the help. See, you can't ask anybody anything. I wish my mother were alive. I'd call the nursing home. I'd say, Ma, how do you cook fish? She'd give me an answer. She wouldn't tell me how to. She wouldn't give me the rigmarole. No long story. She said, you put oil in the pan, get it hot, and throw the fish in. And before it burns, turn it over and cook it. That would be the answer. My mother would have made a great talk show host. Down to earth right then and there. Here we go. I'm going to get fish callers now, fishy callers. Indianapolis, Indiana. Steve, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, hey, Mike. It's the temperature of the oil.
I knew it. So how hot do I make the oil before I put the fish in?
350 degrees.
I put oil in a pan, I turn the flame on. How do I know when it's 350 degrees?
Get a little thermometer that hooks on the side of the pan and goes in the oil.
Wow, a new device to buy at the gourmet shop tonight.
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't even know they made such a thing. But wait a minute, how is it not going to pick up the temperature outside the pan?
Well, because it kind of holds it away from the side of the pan a little bit.
Oh, I love that. That's so scientific. So 350 is the place, and you slip it into 350?
You don't want it to touch the bottom of the pan either.
Really? How do you keep the fish from hitting the bottom if it's a nice piece of fish?
Well, you got to kind of, when you first drop it in, kind of stir it around a little bit.
Yeah, that's exactly the point where I've always had trouble, where it sticks. The minute it goes in, it sticks.
Yeah, you got to kind of shake the pan a little bit, you know, and then...
Oh, now we're getting the chef's calling.
Yeah.
A little body English on that hand, on the forearm.
Yeah, well, we had fish on Friday a lot.
No, I'm serious. Not easy to cook a piece of fish right. Anybody could eat food, but it's very hard to know how to cook it.
Yeah, if you're frying it, especially.
Frying is very difficult. It really is.
Yeah, the trick.
Well, thank you, Steve. I don't want to blow out most of my audience here, and I can't do this. They'd rather hear about Republican, Democrat, Democrat, Republican. Bush is a genius. Bush is a donkey. Hillary's the devil. Hillary's a genius. That's what they want to hear. They don't want to hear this. 1-800-4. Oh, I got to take this call. Ian in Tampa, Florida. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Yes.
First of all, the woman that called, she was pretty close. The gentleman that just called you, he was wrong because the thermometer on the outside is measuring inches of oil in a pan. And if you're cooking sole, which I understand you are, the thermometer is not going to measure 2 tablespoons of olive oil.
All right, well, give it to me the way my mama would have done it. She would have taken a thermometer and put it up you-know-what. If someone thought of a thermometer in a pan, she would have said that thermometer is for when you have a cold, not for measuring oil in a pan. What are you, nuts? She would have said, can't we just do this on an intuitive level? How do you cook fish in a pan? See how complicated this is? How do you do it?
If you want to cook it in a non-stick skillet,
yes.
2 tablespoons of vegetable oil, not olive oil. It's got a high smoking point.
Right. Like I use soybean oil on the turkey breast because it didn't burn. I hear you. So you put in a nice fresh soybean oil, two tablespoons. Did you say teaspoon or table?
2 tablespoons in a nonstick skillet. If you're cooking sole, it's an extremely thin fish. Sea salt, fresh cracked pepper.
All right, but now here comes the good part. How hot do I get the oil before I put the fish in the pan? This is becoming a great question now.
Well, the problem is that with a nonstick skillet, with a Teflon skillet, which I would recommend cooking sole in, it's not really going to smoke. You don't need to smoke it. It's going to cook very gently. It's a very, very gentle fish. You're going to cook
okay.
It very slow for just a minute maybe on each side.
So it's like a liberal fish. It's going to actually enjoy being cooked. It's going to say, thank you for cooking me before it disappears into the oil.
Michael, take it out of the pan, put it on a plate, deglaze with a little bit of white wine, a little bit of chicken stock, a fresh piece of lemon, a little bit of garlic, a little bit of tiny butter, and then pour that over once it reduces onto your fish, and you will have the...
Wait, hold it. Is this after I've already cooked it?
Yes, the fish, you want to cook it 3/4 of the way. Remember something, the heat from the pan will continue to cook the fish. Take it out, put it on the plate you're going to eat from. A little bit of chicken stock, a little bit of
wine. Oh, I like the white wine part, the chicken stock. Okay, then I put that all over the fish, then put it back in the pan?
No, put those things in the pan with a tiny little bit of butter, swirl it around, let it reduce down, and then take that out of the pan and put it on the fish. Remember, the fish is going to continue to cook even though it's not in the pan.
Sure, the molecules are moving out of the pan. I understand that. After the heat gets started, you're moving molecules. So the molecules will keep moving within the fish even though it's outside the pan. That I get. So it's continuing to cook. And then pour that broth, in essence, that reduction broth, over the fish?
A little bit of chicken stock, white wine, fresh garlic, and a little bit of fresh lemon squeezed in there, and a tiny bit of butter at end to reduce the sauce until you like it, whether it be thin or whether it be a little thicker. Pour it over the sauce, and whatever accompaniment, whatever starch or vegetable you have with it, it's done.
Ian, are you a cook in a restaurant?
I graduated from Peter Combs in Manhattan, yes, sir.
Isn't that something? You see, you gave me a straight-up answer. Are you a chef today?
I have since retired, but cooking is my passion, and I am dying for you to release the meatball recipe that I've been listening to you for 5 years.
You know, I wrote about – this is a funny story. I received the meatball recipe by mail when I first started in radio on a local station here in San Francisco 10 years ago or more, and I actually published it in the Savage Nation. Have you seen that recipe in that book, Ian?
No, sir, I have not.
Oh, my God, it's unbelievable to me. It's in there. It was sent to me by an Italian listener in San Francisco I think it was incorporated in a story on not only how to make a meatball, but how to eat a meatball hero, because it required the right bread. He described the bread had to be crunchy and not to ruin it with the wrong sauce. Because, you know, the whole thing here with the king, he said, was the meatball, not the sauce. This guy knew what he was talking about.
Right.
So you cook every night for yourself?
Well, I do. I don't have...
Have you given up on restaurants because of the poor food and the poor service?
No, it took its toll on me over many years. I enjoy being outside now more.
Yeah. Well, I like going out. The problem is the price you pay is awesome for a plate of food. Thanks for the call. Look how much time I burned up talking about a fish. But I want you to notice something from this. I'll draw a parallel from this. Did you see how many different opinions we had on how to simply cook a piece of fish in a frying pan? And did you see that the last caller actually was the best in the sense that he probably knew more about cooking than anyone that I've had? And he told us how to do it. But even he, you had to listen to very carefully to get cooking a simple piece of fish right. Now I ask you a question. Now try to figure out how to run the war in Iraq, how to run an economy, what to do with taxes, what to do with illegal immigrants. Now try to figure out how to run a radio show.
Savage.
I was in a restaurant yesterday. I like restaurants, then I don't like them. I love them, then I hate them. But all right, that's it. I'm a food-oriented person. I grew up in a food house where mom cooked all the time, and there was always ample food. So to me, life is food. Food is life. That's a big part of my being and my culture. And if you don't see it that way, then you may as well turn the show off and go listen to someone talking about brassieres. I don't know what you want to hear, but I go to a restaurant. I was eating alone, and because it was cold out here on the West Coast for two nights, cold, like winter, which I love. I wore a pea coat, a leather jacket. But to make a long story short, it's cold. So I, for the first time this summer, I stopped drinking beer, and I start drinking wine. And shockingly, I drink red wine. And it's Italian red wine. It's a so-called Super Tuscan, 70% Sangiovese, 30% Cabernet Sauvignon. Half a bottle, calamari spaghetti, boom, home, no headache, perfect. Slept like a baby, like someone had injected my muscles with like a muscle relaxant. There is no question red wine has a powerful effect. And I don't drink it because I get sick from it. When the weather goes below 60 degrees Fahrenheit, I can drink red wine. If it's above 60 degrees, say, help me God. See, I'm a natural man. Now, let me explain to you why I'm telling you this story. There's a point to it that you probably won't accept because most of you are not in touch with your bodies. I'm probably the most natural man left on the planet. In the sense, I'm the closest thing to an actual savage. In the truest sense of what sauvage means, and you have to read Le Pensée Sauvage by a great anthropologist in order to understand the mind of the savage. You can't just jokingly say that man is a savage and think that that means he's brutal and he's ruthless. It doesn't apply. You might say that man is a radical Islamist. That would be a better description of what you're trying to say than that man is a savage, because not all savages are as ruthless as the throwbacks. But having said that, here comes the point of the story. So I'm sitting there enjoying the meal, and what's next to me? I mean, a person. What people are next to me? There's a 60-year-old white male, tall and thin, partially bald, looks like he's on a date. His date is some girl from woman. She must be a youngster, about 45. Maybe he met her on the internet. I don't know, a dating service. And this was like their first date. And I'm trying not to listen. Well, I don't know. She got gassed up. She must have been into the dessert course because she got quite loquacious. What came out of this, she was either French or Italian. She spoke very good English, but with a noticeable accent, that Euro trash accent that poses as class. Let me put it to you that way. And every phrase out of her mouth was politically correct garbage. The biggest story, and I'm trying not to listen, I was praying for a momentary Rush Limbaugh of the ear, but it didn't happen. I was thinking of taking a piece of dough and putting it into my left ear. I couldn't take it. I started to squirm in the chair. I was getting like a direct megaphone. I think she was talking through him at me, thinking she must have been scoring points with everyone around her for our brilliance. It went like this. Oh, well, when I was in Ibiza, we were dancing, and there was a black man there, and he was very shy. So I came off the floor, and I reached out to him, and I danced with him, and he said, blah, 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 no one's ever done this for me before, and don't you think it's wonderful? Now, it was like that, okay? Every story had a politically correct twist to it. And, of course, her so-called date was agreeing with everything because he figured he'd get lucky at the end of the night. See, most guys have a theory about women. If you stuff them with food and you listen to them chatter and you agree with everything they say, you'll get what you want from them. It's a horrible thing to do to women, but that's what most men do. I think she was looking for a good argument from me, and she didn't even know me. I think she was trying to get someone to say, shut up already. You know what I mean? Put a cannoli in your yap and shut up already.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
I think my dog has an itching attack from watching Will Blitzer. Because he wants to see the man arrested for sedition and deported. Every time he sees one of these talk show guys on CNN, my dog starts to scratch. Every time he sees Neil Cavuto on Fox, the dog starts to like almost rip his ears out. He can't take it anymore. Teddy understands reality. I have to turn the news off in front of a two-year-old dog. That's what I think is going on. He sees the leprechaun, the dog starts to howl. Had to take the poor dog to the vet today. Oh, God, poor Teddy. You see, sickness comes to everyone. Even a two-year-old dog. He was scratching now for a month, no matter what we tried. Turns out he has a staph infection on his skin. How does a dog get a staph infection? So I asked the vet, is it transferable to humans? And the answer was, well, they say no, because it's a different Staphylococcus species. I sure hope she's right, I'll tell you the truth. Because the minute I heard it, I started scratching in the nose, the inside of my ear itched, in the nostril. You ever get an itch in the nostril? The minute I heard staph infection of his skin, and I had to give him a steroid shot and put him on antibiotics, the nostril itch, the eyelid, the ear. I can make half of America start to itch right now. A lot of it is suggestive, I'll be honest with you.
Savage.
Let's go to Chicago. Bruce, go ahead, please.
Hi, Michael. I have been listening to the talk show this morning, and then I turned yourself on. And in both instances, I heard celebration for the death of Zarqawi. And it actually saddens me, not that there is a win and that we should be proud of our people, but it saddens me that we would be celebrating the death of another human being.
Let me get out the violin. So, in other words, when Hitler blew himself up in the bunker in World War II, you would have said the same thing?
I would not have celebrated it. No, I would not have done that.
Well, what would your reaction have been to a man who committed the world into World War II? Tell me what your emotions or reactions would have been to the news that Hitler was dead. I understand you consider yourself superior to everyone around yourself. I understand that you walk around with a halo in your own mind and that you can't celebrate the death of a mass murderer. I understand that because that would make you human. And you think you've transcended the zoological order, obviously, and that you're somewhat akin to an angel. Bruce, you live in Chicago. Tell me what you think Zarqawi would have done to you had he captured you in Iraq. Do you think you would have suffered the same fate as Nick Berg?
I sure would hope not, but it's possible. And I would not have liked it, of course. But I think the terrorists have won if we become the same savages that they are.
I see. So you would fight them how? You would distribute holy Qurans with gold leaf in order to show them we're nice?
We had to go to war. I definitely agree with that. I don't think that we should be continuing the war for...
Bruce, how old are you? How old a person are you?
37.
How can you live in such a state of childhood at your age?
I know it can be considered...
Did you grow up in a very sheltered environment?
I don't think so. I think I was...
Were you ever in a fist fight in your entire life? Did you ever get punched in the nose by a bully?
most definitely, yes.
You did. You got beaten up by a person who took pleasure in hurting you.
By a couple of different gangs, I have, yes.
Okay. And when they got their due, assuming they did, you took no pleasure in that?
No, actually, I did not. I don't think that it's worth it. It's revenge is...
All right, so you're a superior human being, but the rest of us aren't. So would you permit us to have our day of celebration?
Celebrating a win is
would you permit us little people with less moral authority than yourself to have a slight moment of celebration that a certifiable homicidal maniac was found, hunted down as a result of tremendous coordination and tremendous guts by special forces and Iraqis, and he was killed? You don't see the work that was behind this?
to celebrate our troops for doing what they did, I think is a wonderful thing, but that's not what I feel that we're celebrating. We're celebrating the death of another human being. And whether that mm-hmm. human being deserved to die is still not even the point.
Uh-huh. So are you against abortion?
I'm against abortion.
Mm-hmm. Are you for or against euthanasia?
I am also against it.
I'm talking about assisted suicide. Are you for or against it?
I'm against it.
And, of course, you'd be against capital punishment.
That I'm not so sure of.
Are you a vegetarian, a lacto-ovo-vegetarian, or a lacto-ovarian vegetarian? Which one?
I'm not, no.
You're not? You eat meat?
I do.
You do? And it doesn't hurt you that you've killed a sentient creature every time you bite into a hamburger? I see.
Does.
Oh, wait, but you don't celebrate the death of the cow. Is that the difference?
That is exactly it.
I see. So you enjoy eating the hamburger, but you don't celebrate it. That's the difference. So you wouldn't think so poorly of the rest of us if we simply enjoyed the killing of Zarqawi, but we didn't celebrate it. Is that the differential here? It's a matter of degree?
In a matter of degree, I guess that's one way to say it. But
Bruce, come on. You're pulling my leg. Are you married?
Get him out of. I am married.
Bruce, you are married. Do you have children?
I have one.
Mm-hmm. God forbid. And God forbid, God forbid, God forbid, this child, this beautiful child of yours, fell in the hands of a Muslim homicidal maniac like Zarqawi, and it was done to that child what was done to Nick Berg. You wouldn't celebrate the death of Zarqawi? Think about that. Take two fish oils and get back to me. The nice people of the earth will kill us all. The nice people of the earth will kill us all unless we straighten them out. The multicultural suck-ups like the last caller. This is not a mentally ill man. This is a nice man. Nice is more dangerous, by the way, than you could ever imagine. It's not that the road to hell is paved with good intentions. It's way beyond that. When you have hooded monsters who use a holy book that they wave in the air and chant to their god Allah, I am telling you that it's nice that will kill us. The nice people will kill us all.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Out where a friend is a friend, where the longhorn cattle feed on the lowly Jimson wheat. Back in the saddle again, riding the range once more.
You know, everyone's buzzing about the Obama and McCain answers to this previously unknown pastor of Saddleback Church, Rick Warren. You know, many of you don't understand that this is a part of the government media religion complex. Rick Warren is not the conservative evangelical that the empty skirts in the media would have you believe he is. Who is this man? What shocked me the most is that they did not discuss the biggest issue facing America, which is immigration, illegal immigration. The word border was not mentioned once at the event. The word language, English, was not mentioned once. The word culture was not mentioned once. Rick Warren is part and parcel of the two-party system. He seems to be, to me, an invention of the two-party system, a sort of event to make it look as though he's going before the evangelical crowd, when in fact Rick Warren is as close to an evangelical as Let's put it to you this way. It's a hybridized liberal Christianity that it represents, in my opinion.
I am pro-choice. I believe in Roe versus Wade. And I come to that conclusion not because I'm pro-abortion, but because ultimately I don't think women make these decisions casually.
Who is the pastor of the Saddleback Church where these candidates appeared? Rick Warren has called for the reconciliation between liberal mainstream churches and conservative evangelical churches, i.e. gay marriage. Rick Warren was credited by Time magazine for his focus on fighting HIV/AIDS and global warming, which, as you well know, is a fantasy. In other words, he's a favorite of the far left. Warren avoids talking about sin, such as abortion and gay marriage, in his preaching. Now you understand why both of these shill candidates appeared there? Warren allowed CNN, the most far left of the cable news networks, to broadcast the McCain-Obama event. Again, I will repeat, not one question that I know of was raised about the seminal issue of our time. The future of America hangs in the balance like a loose tooth. They did not discuss illegal immigration. They did not discuss children being born here whose parents are illegal aliens, i.e. anchor babies. They did not discuss English language, the English language once. They did not discuss the cultural bedrock upon which this nation was built.
I think America's greatest moral failure in my lifetime has been that we still don't abide by that basic precept in Matthew, that whatever you do for the least of my brothers, you do for me.
In my opinion, this show debate was very Stalinist. It was nothing more than an opportunity to cover for Obama's far-left views. It gave Obama an opportunity to play the part of Daniel in the lion's den. And as for McCain, the question remains, why does he agree to speak to a liberal church on CNN and yet refuses to come on conservative talk radio? I thought it was outrageous that McCain said, I will appear before any venue. I want to meet any audience I can in America. And yet he's given the middle finger to the Savage Nation, to every other talk show in America that is truly conservative, to all of the conservative websites. He will not appear before it. The man is a liar. McCain is a liar. Now, it's a choice between which liar do you want, McCain the liar or Obama the liar, and who is the bigger liar and who is the bigger threat to America? And if that's what this country has come down to, the choice between one big fat liar or another, we're in worse shape than you can imagine. But again, let's go back to the main thing here. Everyone's buzzing about going before an evangelical church, a supposedly evangelical church, and answering questions. But where were the questions about the most important questions? They weren't there. Who is this man, Rick Warren? Where did he come from? Who suddenly anointed him as the spokesman for evangelicals and conservatives? Why, CNN did. Wow. That's truly a trustworthy source, as you well know. This was nothing more than a show debate. It was right out of the Soviet Union. It would make Joseph Stalin proud. It was nothing. And for McCain, he leaves me wanting a real conservative candidate. Again, I want to reiterate before we go, this guy Warren has called for the reconciliation between liberal mainstream churches and conservative evangelical churches, meaning he wants to confuse evangelicals into becoming liberals. Time magazine, one of the left-wing, one of the most left-wing of all the magazines, has credited Rick Warren for fighting HIV/AIDS and combating global warming. Oh, how touching that is. Let us talk about behavior in fighting HIV/AIDS, and let us talk about the thousands upon legitimate scientists who reject the idea of man caused global warming rather than from some huckster preacher. Warren avoids sin issues such as abortion and gay marriage. What does that tell you about him? Again, take this as a take-home message. Neither candidate was asked, nor did either candidate speak, about the seminal issue of our time, illegal immigration, the preservation of our sovereignty and our borders. This is Michael Savage. What's next? From Saddleback Church to a gay synagogue? Is that McCain's idea for the next appearance? A gay synagogue? Be here or be nowhere. It's the Savage Nation.
Savage. You're listening, to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
The United States respects rule of law.
The rule of law, sir.
But in the debate on migration, I remind my fellow citizens...
Are you kidding?
...that family values do not stop at the Rio Grande River.
Duh? What kind of stupidity does this man... Stop this jerk. Why doesn't he just resign and save us the embarrassment? He believes in rule of law, not the rule of law, but he believes in rule of law. If he was a seventh grade student, I'd give him a D and send him back to the sixth grade. All right, let's put that aside. We know he's dyslexic and a putz. He believes in rule of law. This is in Mexico, but he says family values don't stop at the Rio Grande. Let me see if I understand this. I believe in rule of law, but we're going to let drugs come in because family values don't stop at the border. I believe in rule of law, not the rule of law, but we're going to let 20 million more flood in because of family values. They don't stop at the Rio Grande. Whose president is this man? Is he your president? Does he speak for you? You know, I can't take this guy anymore, frankly. I think he's taking a wrecking ball to the military. And why do I say that? Because he's persecuting the U.S. Marines who do their job in Iraq the way Marines have always done their job. He is persecuting them by trying them for murder. That's number one. He is wrecking the borders of our nation in deference to the Mexican lords who apparently have more meaning to him than the voters. And that is why the Republicans will not win another election for 20 years. I don't think you understand how desperate this country is right now. We have Hillary Clinton. We have the party of the European socialists under the Democrats, the pacifist European socialist party that will see the end of America as you know it. We'll become a new Spain, catering to the Muslim fanatics in this country and abroad, catering to the Muslim fanatics abroad and to the Muslim takeover artists domestically. That's number one. On the other hand, we have a defunct Republican Party that no longer exists. With fraudulent, McCain is finished because he's finished. He finished himself when he started to step aside from the legacy he inherited. So the Republican Party is over. I've had enough of this crap. Politics is the last refuge of the talk show hosts. I think I'm going to stay away from this for a while. In respect for President Bush's appeal for family values and not for the rule of law, again, Mr. President, it's not rule of law, it's the rule of law. You left something out of that sentence. I will now share with you my secret recipe for quick Spanish rice. I was fed up with sandwiches. I was fed up with restaurants. And so I decided to, before rushing to the radio studio, to use leftovers again. My recipe for leftover spaghetti has become a big hit. I have a friend who's a billionaire. He gives away millions of dollars. And he's an arch conservative, but he hates wasting food because he grew up poor. He calls me over and over again. London. He calls me from New York. He says, your recipe for leftover spaghetti is so good with the egg on it. He said, I can't stop eating it. So now I'm going to add to my recipe book. I'm giving you Savage's recipe for quick Spanish rice. The trick here is you have to have leftover rice from the night before or even three nights before, as long as it's in a sealed container. Very simple or very complex, depending upon what level of dummy you are or, you know, what level of sophistication you have with food and what you really require. You put olive oil in the pan. Again, medium. You make the pan warm, not hot. Don't burn the pan. You get a non-skid pan. You warm it. You don't burn it. Medium heat. Then you lower the heat. Then put in Spanish olive oil. I only use Spanish olive oil because it's a lower acidity. I'm starting to mangle phrases like George Bush. I shouldn't listen to him. I forgot what I was saying. Oh, so you put in some Spanish olive oil and you get it all over the pan. You know why I'm doing this? Because I'm on strike. I'm filibustering. Since the country doesn't care about Halliburton moving to Dubai, since the country doesn't care that Bush is working for the government of Mexico, since you don't care that we have more spies working in the U.S. Senate than you care to know about, and since, well, I can go on and on, but I'm not going to go on and on. So you get the oil hot, you see, not burning, not sizzling, not popping. Now, most people would say chop up the onion and put it into the oil. I don't, because I like onion as close to fresh as possible. So I don't put the onion into the oil to cook the onion. So reserve the onion. I also love sweet bell peppers because they're full of vitamin B6. I love onion because of the sulfur compounds and for the vitamin C. So you want to have as much onion and garlic as you can possibly tolerate. If you like it, I live on it. And you chop it up and reserve it. Then chop up the red bell pepper because it's full of vitamin B6, as I say, which is very scarce in the diets of Americans, which is one of the principal reasons that we're having so many heart attacks is the deficiency of pyridoxine. But that's a long, separate story. I happen to like the taste of sweet bell pepper. Get the rice in there. Start mushing it around in the pan until you start to feel it warming up. Mush, 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 mush. Now, I'm making Savage's Quick Spanish Rice. Now, get the rice moving around. Now, I happen to like shrimp. You could put chicken in there. If you have a leftover piece of chicken, cut it up quickly. Or if you have a piece of leftover beef, cut it up quickly. Now, the best thing to do here is to microwave that meat for 30 or 40 seconds to warm it up, or the chicken, or the shrimp. I actually did a big thing today where I defrosted shrimp while the rice was warming. But you got to – now, here's the trick now. Take whatever protein you're putting in the middle of the bunch of rice. Make like a hole in the pan. Make a mound in the center and put the protein right in the middle, okay? Now bury it with the rice. Now you're onto something because you're cooking in a little oven, a little rice oven, the protein down in the bottom. Now take tomato sauce, bottled tomato sauce. I have a favorite I'm using now, which is Amy's. They should advertise, but who cares? It's better than all the others I've used at the right price, like a marinara. Onto the rice. Not too much, though. The mistake most people make is they use too much tomato sauce either on leftover spaghetti or fresh spaghetti or rice. You want a sparse amount of sauce, not so that it's dry, just so it's covered, but not soaking in that tomato sauce. Now you got the sauce on there. Now put in the chopped onions. Now put in the chopped bell red pepper, whatever other vegetable. I happened to pick some Italian parsley out of my garden the other day, which I keep in a plastic bag, which I love. I'm crazy about it. You know, you could wait for the end to put it on. I throw it all in. You must have a cover for that frying pan. You're creating a little oven. Okay, now mush everything around, trying to keep the protein on the bottom so it touches the pan. And bingo, there's your quick Spanish rice. Now, isn't that, don't you feel better hearing another recipe from me with something you can control rather than your borders and your language and your culture, which are out of control because of the traitors and the bums and the thieves and the vermin who are running everything? Sure, you feel better. We could talk about beer if you want to talk about beer. I wouldn't claim I'm an expert. I wrote a book on beer in 1973. I actually have a copy in my hand. I can't reissue. Ooh, a bug just came out of it. So we got it from the warehouse. The chapter is one, Beginnings of a Shicker. 1977. My God, 87, 90s. I can't believe it. You know, I'm ashamed to tell you. 30 years ago, I wrote this book on beer. I loved it. I brewed beer at home. I traveled. I drank it. I went to the brewing societies, this, that. I had pipes in the house and malt and hops and groat and barley, oats, pits, peas, and barley groat, spruce and hops. Who needed to get so involved with it? But I learned a lot in doing it. I really get it. Whatever I do, I throw myself heart and soul into it. Is beer still as popular as it once was? I don't know if people want it anymore. With the advent of medical marijuana, I don't know if they need it anymore. What do they need to know? They need a beer. Did you read the latest story on this, what the libs have done? Kids are now using the ruse of medical marijuana, which is a fraudulent concept to begin with, to smoke marijuana in school. I warned you. I told you about this. It's being pushed by corrupt doctors and the drug lobby that want to addict more children younger. There is no such thing as medical marijuana. It's a complete myth created by George Soros. And George Soros, by the way, the evil Dr. Soros, if I was ever doing like a movie, I would cast him as the evil doctor who wants to destroy America. That's how I view this guy. Evil Dr. Soros spent $1 million to bamboozle the American people into passing medical marijuana legislation in Arizona and California. Now you got kids smoking marijuana in high schools and producing a thing from a shyster doctor. Some quack doctor down there, you know, some mail order doctor who got his degree from the University of Miami or something like that, or Guadalajara U. I knew a kid in Queens. He wanted to be a doctor so badly, but he was too stupid to be a doctor in America. So he waited, saved his money, saved his pesos, and he went to a medical school in Mexico, Guadalajara. He was like a fat, ugly kid that no one would talk to. I won't mention his name. I won't mention Bobby Moskowitz's name. That wasn't his name. So this kid waited and waited. 20 years later, boom, after, I don't know what, he had to learn Spanish. Then he got a a degree out of there. Then he went to more school. Of all things, he becomes a plastic surgeon. Could you imagine now going to a guy like this to have, like, flab removed from your stomach? This guy would remove your kidneys and sell it to someone in Brazil. I won't mention his name.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
To me, religion teaches peace and getting along with your fellow man. And do unto others as you would have them do unto you. I have never encountered in my life a religion that teaches to hate other religions and to kill people who don't follow that religion. And by definition, one day we're going to have to come to terms with the fact that such a definition may not include this religion as practiced by too many adherents in this country and in other Western countries. It cannot stand. We will not survive if we permit people to believe that their religion is the only religion, and other religions must be annihilated, and people who practice those other religions must be converted or killed. It's incompatible with our existence. And by definition, those are not religious teachings. They are political, homicidal teachings. And one day, we're going to have a leadership with the guts to outlaw such teachings. As sure as I'm sitting here, it's coming. It has to come, or this country will disappear. I have studied the story of the great days of the Arabs. And it is one of the most amazing stories of conquest in the whole history of the human race. They smashed the Byzantine army at the Battle of Yarmouk, a tributary of the Jordan River, in 634. And I'm not going to go through the entire list of countries that they conquered. But you must understand that the Arabs conquered Persians and converted the Persians to Islam. You may not know that, but the Persians were not always Islamic. They conquered Syria. They conquered Palmyra, Antioch, Jerusalem, and converted them to Islam, or large elements of the population went over to Islam. And then the Persians went over to Egypt, I believe, and they had a great host with a great force of elephants, and they won. They conquered Persia, as I said. The Muslim Empire kept pushing into western Turkestan and pushing eastward until it met the Chinese. Egypt fell to the Muslims almost without resistance to the new conquerors, who were driven by a fanatical belief in the sufficiency of the Quran. They were ignoramuses, they read nothing, they hated the written word in any other form, and they wiped out the vestiges of the book copying industry of the Alexandria Library that they found in Egypt. They burnt it to the ground. They then poured along the north coast of Africa, and they entered the Straits of Gibraltar and Spain. The Muslim invaders invaded Spain in 710. They crossed the Pyrenees Mountains in 720. In 732, the Arab advance had reached the center of France. They threatened to take over all of France. But finally, the Arab advance was stopped for good at the Battle of Poitiers and thrust back as far as the Pyrenees again. It was only through fighting that the French retained their civilization whatsoever. Now, I don't have the time to go into these early years of the Arabs and the conquest in these 25 years, but you should know that in 25 years, the Muslim Empire expanded greatly across Persia, Persia at that time, Iran today, Arabia, Egypt. And as I said, almost conquered a good portion of Europe itself. But they didn't kill everybody. This is the interesting part. The maniacs today, the little men with beards today, are actually worse than the early Arab conquerors. These throwbacks that we're seeing today in Hezbollah, for example, are not representative of the Arab today. They're not even representative of the Arab of 1,000 years ago. Because when the Arab conquered these other countries, they didn't kill everybody. We can talk about some of the murders if you want, but we should talk about the effect upon the human mind and the general destinies in those nations. The Arab intelligence, never forget, was a great intelligence. And the Arab intelligence that entered these other countries was flung across the world even more swiftly and dramatically than the Greeks had entered 1,000 years before. They stimulated the intellect of the whole world west of China. They broke up old ideas and developed new ones, and it was an enormous advancement for mankind. In fact, when the Muslim Arab mind entered Spain, it discovered an active Jewish tradition of speculation and discussion, and it integrated, it pollinated, and they worked together. In Central Asia, the Arab mind met Buddhism and the material achievements of Chinese civilization. The Arabs learned the manufacture of paper, which made printed books possible Who? From the Chinese. And finally, the Arabs came into contact with Indian mathematics and philosophy. And what happened as a result of these interactions was the intolerant self-sufficiency of the early days of faith, which made the Quran seem the only possible book, was dropped. And suddenly, a renaissance occurred. Learning sprang up everywhere in the footsteps of the Arab conquerors. And so by the 8th century, there was an educational organization throughout the entire Arabized world. And I'm going to pause right there. What we have here are people who are actually pre-8th century, some of them calling this show. Here they are living in the United States of America, the most advanced civilization in the world has ever known. Instead of pollinating and integrating with this world, they continue to disseminate the hatred of the 7th century. Because by the 8th century, the Arab conquerors had created educational organizations, and learning sprang up everywhere in the footsteps of these Arab conquerors. But here in America, we have throwbacks teaching the most ignorant, the most homicidal people in this country that the 7th century is the century to live in, and people who do not practice their religion are less than human, and they must either be converted or you know what else. And so we have a real problem on our hands. But again, I want to remind you that by the 9th century, learned men in the schools of Cordoba in Spain were writing and corresponding with learned men in Cairo, Baghdad, Bukhara, and Samarkand. The Jewish mind and the Arab mind assimilated very well together, and for a time the two Semitic races worked very beautifully together through the language of Arabic. They didn't kill each other. The Arabs didn't kill the Jews. And I'm talking the 9th century. In the 9th century, these throwbacks in the Palestinian world and the Hezbollah are actually a throwback beyond the 9th century, whether you know it or not. And long after the political breakup and the weakening of the Arabs, the intellectual community of the Arab-speaking world actually endured. Unfortunately, it's died by today. But it was still producing considerable results in the 13th century. But we have people in the Arab world today who are living before the 13th century, as I told you. All you have to do is study some of the history. All you have to do is look at the Museum of Alexandria that they burned to the ground in the 7th century. All you've got to do is look at the wonderful things that the Arab mind gave the world. The clumsy Roman numerals, as you know, were thrown out by the Arabic figures that we use to this day. Many of the ignoramuses who call the show, who say that they're experts in the Quran, don't even know that the Arabic numbers that they're using replaced the Roman numerals. They don't even know who Rome was or what the Roman numerals were. The Arabs gave us the zero sign. The very name algebra is Arabic. So was the word chemistry. The names of such stars as Algol, Aldebaran, and Boots preserved the traces of Arab conquests of astronomy in the sky. And so they reanimated the medieval philosophy of France and Italy and the whole Christian world. So the Arabs were a great contribution to world civilization. And you must understand that they also gave us very great advances, although there was barbarism amongst them. They gave us great advances in metallurgy and technology, alloys, dyes, distilling, tinctures and essences, optical glass, were all discovered by Arab scientists. Of course, they were looking for the elixir vitae, a stimulant that would keep people living forever and prolong life indefinitely. But that's okay. That's what drove them. It drives many of us today. I understand that. The bottom line of what I'm telling you is that the Arab mind, the Muslim mind, had integrated with the world, even the worlds that it had conquered, and was getting along with them by the 8th and 9th century. And yet we have people who have called this show who are reflecting the mind of the 7th century Muslim. The ignorance is astounding to me, but when you reflect upon the collapse of the American educational system, the dissemination of lies by the vermin in the media who have made everything morally equivalent, I am not surprised that we have fallen back to the 7th century, or that so many members of our society are still living in the 7th century.
Savage.
What else do you want me to talk about? How about me going on to a new website last night, Google Earth? It's beyond comprehension, Google Earth. You can punch in every address you've ever lived at in your life, which I did after, you know, it was Thanksgiving weekend with the family. My son said, "Dad, you got to see Google Earth." So we sat there last night. I was blown away. I can't believe in heaven after this. There is no heaven. I mean, there's nothing. I don't know if I believe in anything anymore. I think I've become an atheist instantly. I'm kidding. It's just astounding to go on this thing. It's frightening in a way. It destroys your perspective of your uniqueness as an individual. Let me explain it. I go on this site, Google Earth. You can punch in any address. The globe spins. The next thing you know, it's like zooming down to the Bronx where I lived on the street when I was a kid. Then I punch in Hawaii, and then the globe turns, and suddenly the satellite image picks up a house I lived in Hawaii. Then it zooms back to California to the places I'm in. And I said, this is unbelievable to me. There's no privacy left. But then I thought, if a commercial site like Google Earth can hone in on anyone's address on Earth, I'm sure that governmental spy satellites can penetrate buildings with imagery. That's a given. Because this definitely came from the Defense Department a few years ago. They must have latched on to governmentally developed web technology, satellite technology, excuse me, to have gotten this. What do you want to talk about? Google Earth, should it be closed down? Answer, yes. Any sane nation would close down Google Earth immediately. But then since the congressmen and senators are so out of touch with reality, they don't even know what Google Earth is. They know our restrooms on various highways around their districts. They know that. That they have on their maps. Because in restrooms, you can pick up bags of cash. That's all they need. Maybe they can use Google Earth to better target the pickup spots. That might be the reason they don't want to close it down. San Antonio, Joe, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hello. I was an infantry company commander in Iraq from 2003 to 2004. I can go on Google Earth, pull up the two base camps I lived at, and target every tent and building the soldiers lived in.
So you agree with me that this is very dangerous to release into the public?
It's ridiculous for the public to have access to this.
Now, here I am, a talk show host. I know this. In other words, I go on the site last night, okay, for the first time. Immediately, I say this is insanity. How come it takes me to figure this out? Where is Mr. Chertoff, head of Homeland Security? Where's the great Donald Rumsfeld? Where are the generals? Are they out? Don't they know what's going on, Joe?
I showed this to my boss, and he showed it up the chain. It amazes me. Everything we built is available for anyone to look at. I can give it to my mortarmen. They say they can target every building with that information.
Oh, my God in heaven. Well, Joe, maybe I'll do some good by pointing out common sense here. You know, it takes I've come to understand that maybe I don't know how to put this without sounding completely arrogant. I don't know how to put this. I really am at a loss for words. They are so out of touch with reality, the leaders of our country, as witness the border situation, which we've been screaming about. I haven't for 10 years. Others have been doing it for longer. Believe me. Finally, Bush gives a tepid too little too late speech, thinking that we're going to go along with it, you know, with the cheers. I don't believe so. But let's talk brass tacks. You got Google Earth. It can target any building, any tent, any facility in the world. It can be used to mortar any tent, any facility, any building in this country, including anyone's home. That would be any senator, any congressman, any talk show host, any lawyer. This is in the national interest to close down Google Earth. Tell the gel-haired billionaires to stop it now. Shut them down.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
I bicycle to a mall. I normally don't eat at the mall. I just bicycle there for exercise and to look at people, to gape at the fools of Marin County, to see boys being raised as girls, to see girls being raised as boys, to see children being raised to have their throats cut as the enemy raises their children to kill and cut throats. We raise our children to be sensitive and compassionate. So you see little boys walking around like girls with long hair, practically swishing at age 7, with the mother approving of the little girl she's raising in a boy's body. I don't say anything. I just watch. I'm merely an observer. And I wonder, where are we going to get a generation of men who can shoot guns and kill them before they kill us? I don't know. They're going to come out of the middle. I don't know where they're going to come. So then I was hungry. I didn't want to go home and make a tuna fish sandwich before going to the radio station. So I go into this French cafe. Now, you understand that I made a mistake going in. It's been there for 2 years. I've never eaten there. I wasn't in the mood for a meal. I figured I'd have a salad. So I figured it's a bistro French, but I knew it was going to be bad. I go in right away. I said, give me the French onion soup. Is it ready? Yes, the Mexican says. I said, all right, give me a salad. Is it ready? 2 minutes. I'm outside. 10 minutes, nothing. I go in with my number. I said, hey, I said I have to go to work. Trabajo, work. Where's the onion soup? Oh, it's coming, senor. I said, if it doesn't come now, give me my money back. I got to go to work. So then they bring me the soup. Need I tell you what they do to cheat people? French onion soup, the broth must cost 1 cent per cup, if it costs that. The bowl, which was $4.99, had bread in it, some cheese, and 1 spoon of broth at the bottom of the bread. So I said, I can't believe this. I just can't believe they would do this to people. And I'm hungry. I mean, it wasn't the money. I called for the manager, who was a white guy, a skinny French twerp. And I said, do you manage this restaurant? I said, nicely, yes, sir. I said, look, there was a spoon of broth. You see, you picked the bread up. There's nothing there. Yes, sir. I said, don't put any more bread in there. Just give me broth. He brings it back. He says, I refilled your bowl. I look in it again. Full of bread. I pull the bread out. There's 2 spoons of broth. You know what I did? I ate it and left. Because that's what it is. But what do you expect from the French, particularly French in Marin County, California, who know they can get away with murder because the people are like their sons. The people are like their sons, living in a bubble of stupidity, not understanding the danger they are in, not comprehending that the little psychotic Hitler of Iran will kill them all unless he is killed first, not comprehending that radical Islam is here, it is near, it is everywhere, not comprehending that the radical right wing, as expressed by Michael Savage, is their best friend, not comprehending a damn thing about reality, living in a dream world, not comprehending the danger they are in, I said to myself as I left.
Savage.
When I was a kid, every summer, I loved the summer. What kid didn't? Because in those days, you didn't go to summer school. You didn't go to a camp to advance your mathematical knowledge, another to advance your sports knowledge, another to lose your tubby waist. You went and had fun for the whole summer. And we were kind of poor, so what we did was, to get out of the hot inner city, the family rented a small cottage with all the other families from the neighborhood and relatives up in the cool mountains called the Catskill Mountains, and they were known as bungalow colonies because you got basically a one-room, kitchen, bedroom, bathroom, boom. And your whole family was in there, but they were like, the whole thing was filled with your friends and their parents, so it became like a little village. Naturally, it was paradise because every other parent was your parent, and you reverted back to like another time in history, so it was wonderful. We'd play Indians out in the woods, and we'd carve trees and make canoes. God knows what we did. So in one of these places, there was a guy who was a caretaker who lived in an old abandoned barn with his wife, believe it or not. And he mowed the lawn. He had the hammer, fixed the hammer. His name was Woodchuck Bill. And us kids, it was like a Tom Sawyer thing. We loved Woodchuck Bill. Kids loved. Now, remember, he was not a bum. See, today they're bum. They're a homeless. He was what was known as a hobo in those days. And there were people who were hobos. They were sort of respectable in their own way. That was his job category. He's like hobo. He would put it on the IRS. Like, what do you do? Job category, hobo. I don't know what he made, next to nothing. But he lived up in this, as I say, ramshackle barn-like structure with his. He had a wife, actually. And Woodchuck Bill would regale us kids with his stories. And he was a big guy with a big stomach on him. So the story begins with him saying, all right, kids, come over here. Today they probably arrest him for molestation, just for even telling us a story. Some freak would arrest him. He says, all right, I want all of you to punch me in the stomach. Now, right away, that's rape today. It's raping a child in some way. So we'd all go up with our skinny little arms. We're 9, 8, 7, and punch him in the stomach, and nothing would happen. So naturally, we thought he was Superman. He must have been pretty strong. I mean, if you think about it, because they're 8-year-old kids that can give you quite a belt even today. Anyway, so we all hit him, and we realized we were nothing compared to Woodchuck Bill. Then we'd sit at his feet, and he would tell us stories. He'd say, I can remember to this day, he would say, well, I've seen hurricanes, and I've seen tornadoes. Well, we sat spellbound, like really out of a book from the 19th century. So what I liked most about Woodchuck Bill was that he lived in this barn with almost nothing. He had his few pots and pans, him and his wife, and they hung from like hooks over the thing, and they actually cooked in there. But he said he used to eat woodchucks. We'd say, Bill, what do you eat? He said, we eat woodchucks. Who knows if he's telling the truth? I don't know if you can eat a woodchuck. And that's the Woodchuck Bill story. I mean, you wanted something more to it. There is nothing more. That's a jazz story. You got to understand jazz music to understand that story. It ends like boom, and the horn goes down. That's it. But unless you understand how jazz works, you're not going to be like satisfied because you want a beginning, a middle, and an end. And then Bill raped us. and he was taken away by Child Protective Services.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
I think that part of our plan, though, has to be how do we prevent more orphans in the first place? And that means that we're helping to build a public health infrastructure around the world, that we are building on the great work that you and, by the way, this president has done when it comes to AIDS funding.
Climate change, out of control spending, torture, the list goes on a large number of issues that I've put my country first and I've reached across the aisle.
Blue Monday, how are you, Blue Monday? Got to work, lack of sleep all day. Here come Tuesday, oh, Tuesday. I'm so tired, got no time.
Well, here we are again. It's Monday. My goodness. I watched the McCain and Obama interview with that character, previously unknown pastor of Saddleback Church, Rick Warren. You know, many of you don't understand that this is a part of the government media religion complex. Rick Warren is not the conservative evangelical that the empty skirts in the media would have you believe he is. Who is this man? What shocked me the most is that they did not discuss the biggest issue facing America, which is immigration, illegal immigration. The word border was not mentioned once at the event. The word language, English, was not mentioned once. The word culture was not mentioned once. Rick Warren is part and parcel of the two-party system. He seems to be, to me, an invention of the two-party system, a sort of event to make it look as though he's going before the evangelical crowd, when in fact Rick Warren is as close to an evangelical as, let's put it to you this way, it's a hybridized liberal Christianity that it represents, in my opinion. Who is the pastor of the Saddleback Church where these candidates appeared? Rick Warren has called for the reconciliation between liberal mainstream churches and conservative evangelical churches, i.e., gay marriage. Rick Warren was credited by Time magazine for his focus on fighting HIV/AIDS and global warming, which, as you well know, is a fantasy. In other words, he's a favorite of the far left. Warren avoids talking about sin, such as abortion and gay marriage, in his preaching. Now you understand why both of these shill candidates appeared there? Warren allowed CNN, the most far left of the cable news networks, to broadcast the McCain-Obama event. Again, I will repeat. Not one question that I know of was raised about the seminal issue of our time. The future of America hangs in the balance like a loose tooth. They did not discuss illegal immigration. They did not discuss children being born here whose parents are illegal aliens, i.e. anchor babies. They did not discuss English language, the English language once. They did not discuss the cultural bedrock upon which this nation was built. In my opinion, this show debate was very Stalinist. It was nothing more than an opportunity to cover for Obama's far-left views. It gave Obama an opportunity to play the part of Daniel in the lion's den. And as for McCain, the question remains, why does he agree to speak to a liberal church on CNN and yet refuses to come on conservative talk radio? I thought it was outrageous that McCain said, I will appear before any venue. I want to meet any audience I can in America. And yet he's given the middle finger to the Savage Nation, to every other talk show in America that is truly conservative, to all of the conservative websites. He will not appear before it. The man is a liar. McCain is a liar. Now, it's a choice between which liar do you want? McCain the liar or Obama the liar? And who is the bigger liar and who is the bigger threat to America? And if that's what this country has come down to, the choice between one big fat liar or another, we're in worse shape than you can imagine. But again, let's go back to the main thing here. Everyone's buzzing about going before an evangelical church, a supposedly evangelical church, and answering questions. But where were the questions about the most important questions? They weren't there. Who was this man, Rick Warren? Where did he come from? Who suddenly anointed him as the spokesman for evangelicals and conservatives? Why, CNN did. Wow, that's truly a trustworthy source, as you well know. This was nothing more than a show debate. It was right out of the Soviet Union. It would make Joseph Stalin proud. It was nothing. And for McCain, he leaves me wanting a real conservative candidate. Again, I want to reiterate before we go, this guy Warren has called for the reconciliation between liberal mainstream churches and conservative evangelical churches, meaning he wants to confuse evangelicals into becoming liberals. Time magazine, one of the left-wing, one of the most left-wing of all the magazines, has credited Rick Warren for fighting HIV/AIDS and combating global warming. Oh, how touching that is. Let us talk about behavior in fighting HIV/AIDS, and let us talk about the thousands upon legitimate scientists who reject the idea of man-caused global warming rather than from some huckster preacher. Warren avoids sin issues such as abortion and gay marriage. What does that tell you about him? Again, take this as a take-home message. Neither candidate was asked, nor did either candidate speak, about the seminal issue of our time, illegal immigration, the preservation of our sovereignty and our borders. This is Michael Savage. What's next? From Saddleback Church to a gay synagogue? Is that McCain's idea for the next appearance? A gay synagogue? Be here or be nowhere. It's the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
Normally today it's chicken curry and the Savage Nation because I have a habit. I try to keep my habits simple. Go to a certain Chinese restaurant for the chicken curry. All right, I did it again today, and I walked out. I threw the money down. I wouldn't eat it. That was it. It's the last I'm going in there. There's three other restaurants that I went to for 20 years I never go into, and I'm not going to mention them. Some of them are better than this place. This was the last straw. Is it racism? I don't understand it. They look me in the eye. They know me for 25 years. I say, give me the chicken curry with no grease, no oil. All right, it comes out. When they do it right, they make it dry. And I say to her, I said, listen to me, dry, no grease. And they give me the yes, comes out coated with grease. I said, look, I can't eat it. I'm sorry, no nice talk. You know, these are, how shall I put it? There are all sorts of classes of people from every country, as you well know. These people are like from Katz's delicatessen theory, which is yell at the customer who doesn't like the food. There's no subtlety here. So I said, I'm not eating it. I'm sorry. Give it back. She comes back 10 minutes later, the same dish. They must think white people are stupid. They know. I said, you know me for 20 years. I cannot and won't eat grease. So now the owner comes over and she starts to tongue lash me. Now, needless to say, I'm not the kind of guy who takes tongue lashing easily, but I didn't react to her. I said, I'm sorry, I'm not going to eat it. She says, oh, they don't want to cook for you. I said, they don't want to cook for me? You give me a dish now that you could put in the tread of a tank? If your tank stopped running because of rust, you could take your chop suey and stick it in the tank tread. The thing would run better. It wouldn't squeak. I said in my own lingo. No, you don't have to pay. I said, all right, thank you very much. I'm not going to argue with you. I got up. No, you don't have to pay. I put down $10. I waved. I said, here, I pay. Bye-bye. Never go back. That's it. I don't understand it. If they think they're going to stay in business by doing this to people, they're crazy. You know what it is? It's a liberal city where people are afraid of ethnic minorities. And they figure they can do anything they want, run their mouth at you. And they make you feel that they're doing you a favor if you eat in their restaurant. You know what? There's a certain gesture for that from the Bronx that I can't project on the radio. But it consists of one hand over the other in a certain kind of gesture. That's what I'd like to say. Yeah, it's take your food and shove it. So then, but I'm still hungry. Where am I going to eat? Big deal. So I went over to an Indian buffet. Now, the danger of a buffet in the middle of the day is it'll put you to sleep if you have no self-control. I limited it to one single plate. I watched the news, and I left happily. And here I am. Now, I had to share this with you to bring you down to earth. Because as Lin Yutang wrote in The Importance of Living, life consists in watching your neighbor fall off the roof and having your hair cut every 2 weeks. Now, what does that mean? It means that we can only talk so much about international affairs. But as I've said to you, Cato the Elder in ancient Rome, when he wrote about ancient Rome, the historian, he said people may up to a certain point in ancient Rome have cared about what Roman legion was doing what, where, and which foreign province. But at a certain point, they didn't care. And what they cared about was the pebble in their shoe, which means how much does gas cost? What about the banking crisis? Are they losing their home? Why is the school so horrible? Why has California devolved and collapsed into this leftist nightmare of a state? Can it ever be saved? Why are taxes so high? I mean, those are the real issues. And then it comes back down to the election. Which one of the two clowns is going to do less harm to America? That's really all it comes down to, because neither of them are the doctor to cure this country. What you have here is an advanced case of cancer of the political system, and you got two inadequate doctors here. Which one is going to do a less of a damage to the patient? McCain or Obama? That's the only question you have to ask yourself. Don't think for a minute either of them are going to save this country. The man who can save this country, or the woman, has not yet appeared on the political horizon. Maybe it's your daughter. Maybe it's your son. I don't know who it is. But I know that the best and the brightest are not in the political arena. I know that for a fact. I know that the alphas never went into politics. The alphas I have known and the alphas I know are nowhere in the political arena. They're in every other arena. Doctors, lawyers, engineers, talk show hosts, you name it. They're not in politics. Politics in this country has attracted the betas and the deltas, and in this case, two gammas. If you know anything about Huxley, and I'm sure you do, that's all. I have to talk to them about Russia. I started this, now I have to finish it. Now with all the callers, they're lining up around the block. But I'd rather talk about ethnic restaurants and the racism towards white people. How they look at you and the food they throw at you, the gop. Because they figure white liberals will say nothing. To me, that's more important than corrupt contracting. Not all ethnic restaurants, only about 90% of them behave this way. Washington, D.C., Mike, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, let's talk about the ethnic food. I called before. You knew I had a restaurant, a Thai restaurant. I called you a while back.
And oh, yes, I remember this from years and years ago.
You're absolutely correct. And, Mike, I just got back from Thailand, so I can tell you the double dip deal. Let me tell you how it works, okay? They have an attitude towards Americans like you owe them something, not just the fact that they got a job, but they look at us for a minimum of 15, 20% tip because their own people don't throw down a dollar on $100.
Wait, you're talking about when they have a restaurant over here?
Yeah, restaurant over here. And
okay, right. And Whitey has to leave a 20% tip.
Tip, and then if you walk away without a 20% tip, you're like, oh, that's Falang guy. Falang is like a slang term for a white guy or American guy. Oh, that Falang guy, he wouldn't leave. You know, look, he only left me 10%. But wait a minute. The guy was waving his hand like the American flag looking for a glass of water. Where were you? You're scratching your butt off.
How about the white people who go into these restaurants and when they get a glass of water, they say thank you and bow down on the table with their hands together like they're having a religious ceremony?
Yeah, the phony Hindu Buddhist.
Yeah. They're all. Well, you ask for a napkin because they're very good on a single napkin. And you say, may I have another napkin? And you get it. Oh, thank you. Everything to the white person. Oh, thank you. 80 times thank you. The guy gives you the food. Oh, thank you. Like, what's he in business? Then you pay him. He should say thank you to you. And they go out, the liberals here in the Bay Area, and they say, oh, thank you. Like, it was the most miraculous, mystical experience of their life.
You know, Mike, in D.C., 50%, maybe more. Maybe less. D.C. area, 60, 70%. They go out of their way to look like Ricky Martins when they come in, and they bow down. And, you know, you're just supposed to pay, go in there, eat, get some service, pay the bill, right? But it's the same thing like you say. It's a magical mystery tour. And then, God forbid, they should learn.
You know what it is to a liberal? Going into an Asian restaurant for a liberal is the equivalent of a church attendance in their parents' generation. They think that they're doing something good for multiculturalism by attending the restaurant and exposing themselves to the beauties of the foreign culture.
Let me tell you about Thailand also.
Have you ever seen liberals with their children in an Asian restaurant teaching them? You know, I cannot eat in a restaurant with children with coloring books, Mike. I don't know about you. There's something about ding-dong school in a restaurant. I can't take it.
They throw the bowl of rice all over. I remember going up to a guy one time.
But wait, no, let's get off that for a minute. How about children, liberals taking their children to restaurants with coloring books and Crayolas? And I mean, I'm talking upscale restaurants now.
No.
They're in there till 9:30. What are these kids on, speed? Who ever heard of a child eating at 9 or 9:30?
Mm-hmm.
I go to an Italian restaurant in Marin County, California. They're there 9 o'clock, the little people, with coloring books. And the worst part, Mike, is the parents who try to show how smart their children are by giving them a lesson at the table, like an Encyclopedia Britannica story at the table, that you should take a look. Oh, what a smart child you have there. Wonderful. Great. I'm glad you brought him out. Can't they have a cutoff time for children under the age of 10, like 9 o'clock, so I can safely go and have a meal?
And the other thing is they want it free. They want it free for the kids.
Well, they want to have children's play. But I have a friend, wait, don't get so carried away. I have a friend who goes and asks for a children's portion of spaghetti, and he's a grown-up. What do you do with that?
Throw him out.
So did you leave I hear the restaurant business is the worst business in the world.
Terrible. And you know what? They'll always play you, Mike. They play the hand like they don't know. They play Dopey, you know, the Seven Dwarfs, Dopey. And the next day you can tell them the same thing, and the next day and they look at you, they shake their head.
But I ate in this joint for 25 years, and every week I come in, I want it dry, no grease, no oil. Okay, they give me and it comes out like somebody poured oil all over. And I'm talking bad. This is bad for the arteries. God knows what the oil comes from, what's it extracted from. I said, I'm not eating it. Why did they have to do it to me again? Did they think I would take it because she came over with a big mouth?
You see, they think everyone who is American will take their crap. And
well, I didn't take it. In fact, I didn't eat it. She says, you don't have to pay. That was an insult to me. I threw the money down. I said, no, I am paying.
Well, you should have not paid, Mike.
No, I want to pay. I want to pay because I'm not a poor man. I will not have this kind of abuse. I'll never go in there again. It's over. Now, I want to ask you something. Have you noticed the quality of restaurant food, primarily Asian food, has gone drastically down in the last few months?
Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Dateline Los Angeles. Daisy chain immigration destroys America. Why is immigration a topic that nobody will touch but me? Well, there's two reasons. One, because they are not aware of it, because they live in a bubble. They've all made it so big that they are insulated from the day-to-day realities of life, which I, Michael Savage, am not insulated from. I live in the realities. I work in the realities. I take home a paycheck. I'm not one of the media elite. I'm an immigrant's son. And I'll tell you, daisy chain immigration is destroying everything I believe in. But Michael, aren't we all descendants of immigrants? Madam, you may have a good heart, but your brain has been weakened and is soft. Yes, of course, we are all immigrants in America, but not all immigrants are equal. When your grandmother or great-grandmother came over here, there were checks in place. You couldn't come in with fulminating tuberculosis. You couldn't come in with AIDS. You couldn't come in with leprosy. You couldn't come in with cholera. You couldn't come in with typhoid fever. Today, not only can you come in with these diseases, but they'll be happy to give you medical care at the dock. And if you come in 9.5 months pregnant and want to pop one out on the dock, go ahead, because that little brat will become an instant American citizen. So you can come in with disease. You can come in pregnant. You can come in broke. And they give you instant medical care. Instant legal care with all of the salivating ACLU attorneys waiting at the dock to see who they could sue on behalf of the immigrant. SSI,
making more money for having swum across the Rio Grande than your father gets, having fought in World War II. More than a million fake documents, including Social Security cards and driver's licenses, were seized during a raid of a self-storage business. The counterfeit documents included resident alien or so-called green cards. A million fake documents, including Social Security cards and driver's licenses? How about Social Security cards? What does that mean to you, Mr. and Mrs. Liberal? It means that if your father fought in the Korean War, or your grandfather fought in World War II, and he's still living, which is unlikely, it means that this slime with a fake Social Security card can collect more benefits than him. That's what it means. And that really gets me pissed off. That gets me so angry, I don't know how to begin telling you. And that's why I go for joyrides every once in a while in my 65 red Cadillac convertible. Primo, by the way, 52,000 miles. You want to go on a ride with me, all you got to do is jump aboard the Savage Nation every day. I really like that. That's why I'm playing the recording of my car last night. So that's it. Social Security cards, licenses, green cards, fake documents sold, 1 million fakes. How many fakes are out there that haven't been found by the INS because they don't want to find them? How many drivers out there? How many birth certificates? How many citizens who are not citizens who voted in your election? Putting in these left-wing rats, these left-wing communist phonies all over America. You're going to hear how dangerous it really is. Huge story that won't make it to your local newspaper. They don't want to wake up the rubes. They don't want to shock the rubes of America. They want to keep you nice and, well, sort of deadened. You got streaming video pornography to keep you active during the day while you're at work. You've got live porno at night after your wife falls asleep. You've got the stupid bowl on the weekend. What more do you need? You need junk food? You got plenty of junk food. You're living like a pig in a trough. You don't want to know about the Soviet spies that coated America with hidden arms caches. What does that have to do with you, dummy? They were ready to blow up power stations. They were ready to take out leaders who opposed the Soviet Union. How do I know it's true? There was a testimony in front of Congress. And the guy giving the testimony, Colonel Lunev, had to wear a black hood. But what's going to make you crazy, as it made me, is that while Colonel Lunev, a former Soviet general, was divulging this in Congress, Henry Waxman and the other liberals who ought to be rounded up and tried for sedition were trying to make the colonel into the enemy for telling the truth. And I say, take the Henry Waxmans of America and try them for sedition today so that we have it tomorrow. Now let's see the next story. Cigarette Nazis are out there. The cigarette fascists are everywhere. If you light up a cigarette in certain cities today, you can go to jail faster than sucking on a crack pipe. Why has there been a virtual war against tobacco with hardly a word coming out of Hillary's mouth about drugs? Very interesting question, Savage. Could it be called sleight of hand? Could it be called a trick on the American people? Is there an answer to it? Yeah, you can figure it out yourself. All you got to do is follow the money to the south of the border. NAFTA, North American Free Traffickers Association. That's what NAFTA is. Bring in those Mexicana trucks. Mexico, Mexico, here we go, old gringo, Mexico. Bring in those trucks. No license plates, packed with contraband. Life is good in America. The streets are paved with gold. And of course, what you do is you keep attacking cigarettes. So you tell the kid he should take medical marijuana, but if he puts a cigarette in his mouth, you put him in jail. That's America today. According to a report, the Boca Raton, Florida, city council wants to ban smoking everywhere. Now, in Boca Raton, the land of retirees and scam artists, smoking is already off limits in city government buildings in one city park. In fact, you're going to find a proportionate relationship, in my opinion. The higher the liberal quotient, the more restrictions there are on smoking. Did you notice that? The more phony they are in their everyday life, the more they crack down on things like smoking and fat, the more they are for animal rights, the more they hate America, the more they love animals. Yeah, it's an interesting quotient, isn't it? The more that they are anti-American in their rhetoric, the more they're anti-family, anti-Bible, anti-father, anti-God and the Holy Ghost, the more they hate cigarettes. Is there a relationship? Maybe. I don't know. I'm not a psychologist. What do you want from me? So in Boca Raton, Florida, the city of retirees and scam artists, the city council would ban employees smoking at home. Employees who were found to have smoked at home would be fired. No, this can't be true. It can't be America. You're telling me the smoking Nazis of Boca Raton, Florida, are going to send inspectors into a city employee's house, and if they find a cigarette butt, they fire them? Ha, ha, ha. It can't be in America. It's impossible. Just can't be happening. Can't be happening here. In fact, it can't happen here. Why isn't our president a caring man, more compassionate than Mahatma Gandhi? I don't know. It's possible. Could be. Employees found to have smoked at home would be fired. Roughly 700 employees already on the payroll of this city would be grandfathered and allowed to continue smoking in their homes and cars. You know, that's so good. That is so American of them. Man, that's good. That just shows how American they are. If you're grandfathered in, you can still smoke. Otherwise, they can break your door down and arrest you for smoking. That's amazing. That's amazing. And that's coming out of Boca Raton, Florida, the city of Medicare scam artists and retirees who vote for Clinton because it means more medical benefits and more money for their grandchildren. Now, I thought that private property meant you could do what the hell you want behind closed doors. I thought that if you want to eat fatty foods, smoke cigarettes, swill beer behind closed doors, and throw fruits and vegetables in the garbage, that's your business. Not according to the New America. No siree, Bob.
Savage. Play Earth Angel, because a caller wants to know where I were when I first heard Earth Angel. So maybe that's a good one to do. Does anyone know this? Loud, 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 loud as you can dare on the Savage Nation. We'll get away from the flag. Does anybody remember this song? Does anyone want to call the show in the remaining minutes and tell me where you were when you first heard this? Because I'll tell you right now, I'll confess. I'm inside the Savage Confessional. I was inside what was known as a finished basement in Queens, New York. That's when the people who lived in a, you know, small houses would have the basements paneled with knotty pine. And maybe the father would put a little bar down there. But the kids would usually have parties in these basements. And we would dim the lights on a Friday or a Saturday night. We'd play this kind of music. And we'd grab each other. And we would dance so close to each other for so long till, well, our clothing melted. That's where I was when I first Earth Angel. Oh, I would hate to meet the girl I danced with, though, when I was 11. I don't want to see her. It's a terrible thing. I don't go to reunions for that reason. Because they have to look at me. I have to look at them. I don't really want to know what they think, what I look like. Then everyone gets into jockeying. Everybody's a billionaire at a reunion. Everybody's done so well, it's impossible to keep up with. That's why I never go to reunions. It's always me and Snowy instead watching television. All right, thanks for the song. Who are the Penguins? Are they still living? Okay, play it if you want to play it up. You can play it out. I don't care. I'm into an old rock and roll phase. It's very American. The thing I love most about it is that the enemies of America listen to the show and they transcribe it. They have to send it back to foreign governments. They don't know what to do with this music. They usually get executed because they can't translate this music into, let's say, whatever. Imagine some Chinese spy who monitors this show, The Savage Nation, and he has to send it back to China. And he can't translate. He doesn't know the black lingo, the black language. And the guy's like, oh, my God, I don't know what they're singing. What is this? What is this? And he sends it back, and he said, they send him a letter, come home immediately. The next thing is kidneys are harvested. So I think I'm going to play more rock and roll of the 50s. That way we'll knock off a few spies who can't translate it. Oh, only I could think of that. I'm sorry. I'm just having a good time. Do you mind? Glenn in Fremont, California is going to... He's telling us to... Glenn, in 1 second or less, when did you first hear this song?
I heard it at a Demolay dance when I was 14 years old, and it was the first real kiss I ever had in my life. And
thank you. Bingo. Bingo bongo on the Savage Nation. Everybody remembers their first kiss.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
We'll go on to another topic
that I'm told is not a good topic for talk radio if you want to survive, which is guns. No calls on it, but I'll throw it in. It's a one-inch story from the New York Times. Listen to the headline, will you? It says, man shot and killed in restaurant robbery. Now, if I had written the headline, it would have read, cop saves lives of innocent with his gun. But instead, the perverts at the New York Times, the same people who would like to throw, well, babies in garbage cans and would like to take your gun away, they make it sound as though the gun killed a man who was innocent. What happened was a Department of Corrections captain who was off duty was in the restaurant, the Hong Kong Kitchen in South Jamaica, when two crooks walked in and told everyone that they were robbing the restaurant. Now, one of the crooks points a gun at the head of one of two customers and then rifles through their pockets. The off-duty cop, Captain Sheehy, who was off-duty and in plain clothes, pulls out his gun, tells the robber to drop his gun. The man turns toward the captain. The captain fires three shots and kills him. Now, listen to the headline that these perverts at the New York Times write. Man shot and killed in restaurant robbery. That's not the right headline. The right headline is cop saves lives of innocents with gun. Go to hell, New York Times is the real headline. I'm fed up with them. I told you liberalism is dangerous for your health. When are you going to learn it? There are suicidal elements at work in our society. Most of them are liberals. Not entirely all of them. Most of the suicidal elements that would pull this great country over the cliff are psychotic, psychopathic, red diaper, doper baby liberals. And I've had enough of them. I can't take it anymore. They're not just a choice. They have one opinion. I have another. Let's debate with these sickos. What do you do in your family? Boy, I'm enraged over this. What do you do in your family if you have a crazy person? What do you do in your family if you have four children? And of the four children, one of them is insane. You give that insane child as much, let's say, his opinion, excuse me, that insane child should have as much value as the ones who are not insane? Or do you tell that insane child, look, I still love you, you're a member of the family, but your vote doesn't count to me. You're crazy. History will prove, you study history and you understand that anybody with your ideas has killed nations before. Now, I could go from AIDS to abortion to guns. You name the issue. And the only reason we have the problem is because of ultra-liberalism. I'll repeat that and I'll stand by those words. I'll bet my whole career on this. The only reason we have those problems is because of ultra-liberalism. The AIDS epidemic could have been snuffed out in the early 80s. If we had public health officials who had not been bought out and sold out by the AIDS lobby, the AIDS epidemic could have been stopped in its tracks. I was in San Francisco at the time. I remember Feinstein, the senator, then the mayor, what she did. She kept the gay bathhouses open. I tried to close them. They called me Adolf Hitler. I ask you who Adolf Hitler is. The one who let the bathhouses stay open and let the AIDS epidemic spread out of control? Or the man who tried to save the lives of gays who didn't know what they were doing? Who was the Hitler? I'm working myself up into a fever pitch here. There's so many stories. And when I hear someone say to me, oh, Michael Savage, it's a slow news day. You want to talk about taxes, Mike? Would you like to talk about taxes, Mr. Bush's tax proposal? No, thank you. I'm really not interested. We are living in the midst of a social war. We're living in the midst of a cultural war, and we're losing it. The reason we're losing it is because we have bureaucrats running the country. Now, Bush may be a good man. He may get some things done. But he's not really a leader who inspires me. He has no real leadership ability. I don't care if he's a clever politician or not. I like leadership. I want Patton to lead my country, not some MBA from Harvard. I don't want an MBA number cruncher running my country. I want somebody who can get up there with moral authority and moral leadership, and there is a moral vacuum in this nation just when the nation needs it most. That is a moral leader. I guess that's where talk radio comes in.
Savage.
You know, I rip on San Francisco an awful lot for its social policies. But what you have to understand is the context of what happened here, because it's what's happening in your community or what happened will happen across America. San Francisco was about the most tolerant city in America because it was a city that had descended from the wide-open gold rush days where everyone minded their own business and they got shot
or jump the other man's claim. They learned to basically be very independent and mind their own business. So they left everyone alone. They were a highly sophisticated city. When I first came here in the early 70s, I compared it to the best of New York City. And I found that native San Franciscans were very much like native New Yorkers. They were extremely friendly, contrary to the public impression. But as the degenerates moved in, and the radicals moved in, and the communists moved in, what they did was is they sucked off all of the goodness of the city and spat it out and converted it into a hateful monster. And they became the most intolerant. It became the most intolerant of cities in the United States of America. The rudest people on earth live here. The people without the slightest modicum of social graces live here. And I'll explain you the difference in a minute here, because it's happening in your community too. I go and I order this Mario Delmonico CD. So I go in. Now listen to me. It's waiting for me under my name, Savage. I come in and there's an old... let's say an old white guy there with an earring, a couple of earrings. In fact, more than a couple of earrings. In fact, a lot of earrings. In fact, more than a lot of earrings. This man had an earring on his soul. And I don't really care. But give you an example of the interchange. Compare it to the beautiful Italian people that I know in this city and others with a city and a sophistication to them. I go and say, here's a guy, he's probably been the clerk in the classics department for years because he thinks he's sophisticated. And... I give him my name, and he doesn't talk to me. He talks to some guy who's loading boxes like he's talking to me to throw me off and says, by the way, where's the CD? He says to him, where's the DVD? I said, no, sir, it's a CD. And he doesn't even acknowledge what I said to him. He goes about his business. He gets the thing. He's rummaging around looking for my thing without acknowledging that I even asked for it. He gives it to me, and like a ventriloquist, continues to talk to his assistant about something else. And I'm happy. I won't let him bring me down. I know what he's trying to do. He doesn't know me from a hole in the wall. But he's a typical degenerate of the soul, and he's trying to bring me down with his insulting Dracula-like behavior, but I won't go for it because I'm feeling too good. So I sign the credit card form, and out of spite, I say to him, thank you very much, and he doesn't say a word to me. And you know what? I said nothing. I walked out, and I said, I'll just tell the story on the radio. I'll talk about the real San Francisco, which is the people that I know, whether they be Chinese or Italian or Irish, the good people of this city. And I'll talk about the degenerate filth who came into this city and pretend that they're sophisticated, but they're just like the Taliban. They're just as intolerant. They're just as degenerate.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Savage.